Well, the book doctors have been hard at work compiling their list of the best books of 2011. If I'm not mistaken, it's been a pretty good year for books. With us to talk about their favorites from the year that almost was, Steve Paul is a critic at large for The Star, the newspaper's former book editor and a one-time bookstore owner himself. Stephen, good morning to you.
Hello, Steve. Thanks for having me back.
Jeffrey Ann Goody is a freelance writer, editor, and reviewer. Jeff, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve. It's actually Gowdy.
Gowdy.
I'm slipping.
I'm slipping, yes. And Mark Luce is with the Barstow School. Mark, joining us on the phone this morning. Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm knee-deep in finals, but I'm doing pretty well.
Well, Mark, how good a year was it, in your view, when it comes to books?
I will be honest. I think it was a good year. I think there were a lot of names that had a lot of big names that had books out. And, you know, I do a little bit of reading in the summer for new stuff, and then I do most of my reading of new stuff over basically the holiday break. But for me, sort of hands down, the best book of the year was Dan Wedrell's The Outlaw Album. He's one of my favorite writers anyway, and so that's not a big surprise. But I was concerned about how he would do with short stories, to be honest. I knew that the prose would translate, but I didn't know that the stories would translate, and they do.
It's a bleak book, Mark, really bleak.
Yes and no, but I mean, I agree with you that the subject matter can be bleak, but I also think that there's sort of a quiet dignity to it, and I also believe that you do have a sense of family, and while it might not be sort of the family that sits around the fire and tells stories, nevertheless, it is a family. You know, it's a different type of world than certainly we're used to here in the city, but to me, the subject matter, yes, it is bleak, but the writing is so crisp. The writing is so good that it trumps that subject matter.
And that I agree with. And, Steve, before we go too deep into this, how are book sales across the land? And obviously all this is complicated by the rise of e-books and sort of the new wave out there. But what kind of trends are you seeing when it comes to book sales overall?
Yeah, it's a very wild and crazy time, as it is in all of the media. I mean, just a great transformation going on. E-books have been rising in sales and taking a bigger and bigger percentage of sales. We've had, Barnes & Noble went under this year. Bookstores are struggling to kind of find their place in the world. As Mark said, you know, it was a pretty good year for books. I mean, there were some wonderful books out, both fiction and nonfiction. It sort of defied, you know, the fact that it's getting harder and harder to kind of make a book and sell a book. There are still some great books out there, and people are still at it. Some of the trends are a little disappointing and disturbing when you look at sales. But as the migration to e-readers continues, that's really going to change the economics of book publishing, we'll just have to see whether great writers like Dan Wedrell or some of the other people we're going to talk about here in a minute can find their way and can maintain careers by publishing in the mainstream. I mean, the other big trend I'm seeing day in and day out, the emails I get from people who are self-publishing their books across the land, and it's just a huge trend. I think it's a disturbing trend. Anybody can publish a book, and who's got the time to take a look at these things?
I was going to say, how do you handle self-published books?
I've basically come to the conclusion that we can't handle it.
It's too much.
There's just too much of it. If a book has a particular local, maybe regional interest, and if that book meet some standards of professionalism, then we might take notice of it. But weeding those you know, weeding everything else out, there's just no way.
Because books published by a reputable publisher are sort of a screening device
there is a filter. You've got editors and publishers saying, hey, this is a book that's deserving of a readership beyond the author's friends and family.
Yeah. Jeff Van Gowdy, how do you handle self-published books?
Basically, I punt them. I mean, people write me and say, you know, I read your reviews in the Star, you know, can you review my book? And I kind of deflect them. Yeah, mm-hmm. Basically.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that in terms of the economics of it, I think hardcover sales are holding pretty steady, but it's paperback sales that have really taken a nosedive. And people are still opening up bookstores. Ann Patchett just opened up an independent bookstore in Nashville, Parnassus.
Wait, people are opening
books.
Up bookstores.
Yeah, I have a friend. I have a friend who Mark knows who launched a small press in California. I mean, to do not e-books, but to do real books or ink on paper. And there are courageous folks who are
Can you make money opening
up a
new house?
Well, what Patchett said was she thinks with the decline of the big bookstores that there is room now for smaller. I think her store has like 2,500 square feet with hand-picked inventory.
Yeah, so. Steve, I would say, I think that the sort of this move toward almost like a boutique bookshop,
exactly.
Which I think what the guy that Steve's referring to is David Kippen in L.A. And he's doing it too.
I heard. Yeah.
But I think that boutique sort of feel, once people, you know, the thing is everybody's always looking for a deal, and so they're like, okay, well, I can spend $25, you know, at the local bookstore, or I can spend $17 at Amazon,
or I can spend $9.99 for the Kindle version.
Right, and what they miss, and I think what people are sort of starting to realize is that you miss that sort of connection that you get when you're in the bookstore, whether it's with other patrons or whether it's with the people that work there, right? Because they're going to give you a recommendation, right? Not an algorithm that's on a computer. And I think that more and more people are realizing, hey, you know what? I'll go ahead and spend that $7 because in the long run, right, I'm helping keep jobs in the community, right, which is another new selling point that the bookstores are making.
Right.
And you're paying for that service of recommended.
And you're paying for that service.
Yeah.
So now, wait a second. You're saying even David Kippen is opening a bookstore?
Yeah.
He already did.
Yeah.
It's been open for about a year, I think.
Okay.
Well, Jeff Van Gowdy, what's on your list for the best books of 2011?
I brought in State of Wonder, which I nominated for the Star's Top Books of 2011 by Ann Patchett.
Tell me about it.
And it's set in the Amazonian jungle, and it takes on big ideas and has well-developed characters. In terms of the best books kind of list, it made the top list, top 10 titles of Publishers Weekly. It made the top 100 of the Kansas City Star, made the top 10 of the Christian Science Monitor. Did not even make the 100 notable books of the New York Times Book Review, which I thought was a bit of a snub.
Yeah.
But a wonderful book. It's not my very favorite Ann Patchett, but even a flawed Ann Patchett is head and shoulders above the rest as far as I'm concerned. Concerns a pharmaceutical researcher who goes into the jungle to find a colleague. The colleague had gone to check on a doctor who's in the jungle doing research on an indigenous tribe that can stay fertile into their 60s and 70s. She checks on the doctor, and the doctor was actually her teacher, and she confronts a buried past, and she finds out she can forgive herself. The doctor forgave her. It's got wonderful, wonderful passages of beauty and mystery, and I loved it.
Tell us the name of that book again.
Ann Patchett's State of Wonder, published in June. I reviewed it for the Star.
Yeah, we'll have a list on our website later on today at kcur.org. And Dr. Paul, you have a book on top of your list that actually made my list of the year's best books. You've just moved it over to your right there and proceed.
It's like a shell game. Yeah,
it's like a shell game. You're
just
moving things around all over the place.
On Jeff's point, you know, everybody makes lists, and not all lists are the same, which is one of the good things. And our list of top 100 books in the Star, which came out a couple weeks ago, I think the overlap with the New York Times list might be 10%. There's that many, that many different books on both lists. And the fact that one book makes one list and another book makes another list is a result of the, you know, the taste of the people who are making the list. So,
exactly.
The book on top here made a bunch of the best lists,
yeah,
by the
yes,
way. I've seen it everywhere.
And on our best one of the 10 books on our best of the best list, which included Dan Woodrell's Outlaw album, as Mark talked about, is this one that's been well covered here in town, The Destiny of the Republic by Candace Millard.
She's from Kansas City.
From Kansas City.
Just a great lady.
Her second book of narrative nonfiction that is just that takes you to a place in American history and makes you kind of surrounded and thrilled to know that you're learning something that you might not have known about when you were studying
American
history.
When I first heard this was going to be about a president named James Garfield, mm-hmm. who was in office for about 22 minutes, and you wonder, what is she thinking? How can she pull together a story like this? But what a remarkable story it is.
Right. It's an incredible mm-hmm. story, and you come away. This is, of course, about the assassination of James
yes.
Garfield. And one of Candace's major interests is in science, and she's a science reporter. And as she delved into this story, she realized that the science hook in this story was not the political hook, although there's great politics that resonates, you know, that we can identify with today. But as the subtitle tells it, A Tale of Madness, Medicine, and the Murder of a President, you know, Garfield was shot by a wacko, you get his story, Charles Guiteau. But was he killed by Guiteau, or was he killed by the doctors
yeah.
who attended Garfield over the that day and over the next few months?
And his treatment will buckle your knees.
And that is the really incredible story of this book. And not only do you come, as I said, not only do you come away with a new appreciation and sadness over the loss of a great man in our history, in our presidential history, you get this amazing story
yeah.
of science and the failure of science and medicine.
Well, that's a great pick. Yep. It's on my list as well. Mark Luce from the Barstow School. We're talking about our best books of 2011 with the Book Doctors. Mark Luce, what's next on your list there?
The next book on my list is Brian Selznick, who wrote The Invention of Hugo Cabret, and his newest novel, sort of a graphic novel and part a narrative novel, is called Wonderstruck. And it traces a young boy who, in 1977, is sort of looking for missing his father. And that story is written in regular sort of prose. Then it also traces the story of a young woman named Rose, who in 1927, I think, her story is told in pictures. And she is fascinated with a sort of movie star. Now, there's lots of sort of dips and dives, and the stories sort of tie together in interesting ways. There is even sort of a puzzle aspect to it. Like Hugo Cabret, I mean, the guy can just flat out write. There's a sense of magic to it.
Hmm.
Much of it, a decent amount of it takes place in the Natural History Museum in New York. And it's just, it's pleasant. It's the kind of book that that adults can enjoy, and it's the kind of books that basically make 9- and 10-year-old boys and girls readers.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I can't sort of say enough good things about him and what he does. I think this, while I'm not going to put it on the same shelf necessarily with Cabret, because I love that one so much,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty darn good.
We interviewed Brian Selznick and Candace Millard on our show. We'll put links to both those interviews on our webpage, kcur.org. Just great conversations with both those folks. Jeffrey Ann Gowdy, what else do you have on your list here?
I reviewed this for The Star, Joan Didion's new memoir, Blue Nights, which is an excruciating read. It's a postscript to her 2005, The Year of Magical Thinking, which concerned the sudden death of her husband. He died at the time that their daughter began to suffer a series of illnesses that required hospital stays. And this book is about her daughter's death. So she's remembering her daughter. She is also reckoning, coming up with her own parental mistakes. We all make them. She made them too. But it's also about her own aging. Mm. She writes that she somehow never considered that she would really age. And yet, you know, she has neuropathy.
we all think she
wakes up on the floor bleeding after a night out on the town. She is extremely frail. She weighs in at about 80 pounds. Mm. She drinks protein shakes. She eats vanilla ice cream. She's still very famously frail. But basically, the book is about the greatest tragedy anybody can suffer when a child precedes a parent into death. And she has this knack for the telling detail. And one thing that kind of got me about the book was some of the telling details when she's evoking an earlier time are like brand name clothing or, the most she this or that or sort of famous movie stars that were in the social milieu that she and her husband moved in because they're both screenwriters. So it can kind of smell a little bit like privilege. But she catches the reader right off and says, hey, I'm not going to cop to the charge of privilege, you know, given what happened here. And she's just one of our master stylists. Her rhythmic prose, she just turned 77. She's definitely a cultural force. I think, for my money, her Slouching Towards Bethlehem and the White Album are like the iconic texts of when I came of age. And I think she's a brilliant writer. She still has her writing chops.
That's Joan Didion's.
Joan Didion's Blue Nights. One thing that the listener can't see this, but in each of her books, she has sort of a little visual code on the cover. And on this one, the letters that stand out are N-O, no. Mm. But the message here is, you know what? As much as you want to deny death and dying and aging, you can't when they come knocking.
Good recommendation. Steve Paul.
Yeah, let's get back to some wild and crazy fiction. I think one of the one of my favorite novels of the year, and again, a book that made our top 100 list and made a lot of other lists as well, top book list, is by a young writer named Karen Russell. It's called Swamplandia. And that's Swamplandia with an exclamation point in the title. This is just a great book set in Florida. Swamplandia is the name of a theme park that the young narrator lives in and comes out of and wants to save. Her mother, Ava Bigstreet is her name. Her mother, Hylola Bigstreet. Was the star of the show, and she would climb up to a diving board and dive into a pond of alligators. and when her mother, Ava's mother, died at a young age, that set a lot of bad things in motion. And Swamplandia goes into decline. Ava's brother, Kiwi, older brother Kiwi, goes to the mainland to work for a rival theme park called The World of Darkness in hopes of making enough money to kind of come back and save the family place. Ava goes through a long journey that includes trying to figure out her crazy sister's love affairs with ghosts and obsession with ghosts, which causes her to tell some incredible stories about Florida and American history and people. And anyway, it's an incredible combination of things, and it's like taking another Florida writer named Carl Hiaasen and a novel like Geek Love and dressing them up with seasonings out of Huck Finn and Thomas Pynchon and Dante Alighieri and churning out what I would call is the best Gator sausage you've ever read. but it is really a fine book.
The title again
it's
is
called Swamplandia by Karen Russell.
How old
young
is
writer. She is all of 30 years old. This is her second book. Her first, I think she teaches, she's in New York. She came out of Miami. She had a book of short stories about 5 years ago, and so I assume it took her the next four or so years to write this one, but it's very fine.
Mark Luce, we just have about a minute left. Give me a bite-sized recommendation
here. I'll give you a quick one. I'll give you a best and a not-so-best. Okay. Best, Marriage Plot by Jeff Eugenides, even though it's a little bit snobbish. Mm-hmm. The guy is such a good writer. It's so much fun. It has you laughing out loud. On the strikeout list, I am going to put in basically an opposition to everyone in the world that The Art of Fielding, the much-celebrated Chad Harbach novel. I read 50 pages of it last night and set it against the Eugenides, and I don't understand. I don't
Mark, great. My sister-in-law just bought me that book. Thanks so much for, taking that down a few notches. Yeah.
It failed the 50-page test.
Jeff, you have anything else you want to throw out there quickly?
I'd like to give a shout-out to Bent Road by Lori Roy, and it made the Kansas City Stars list. I nominated it, and also the New York Times Book Reviews list. But they put it in suspense. So it could be read as either suspense.
A shout out to Paul Hendrickson's kind of biography of Ernest Hemingway called Hemingway's Boat. Everything he loved in life and lost. It was about his last 30 years or so.
And I'll throw out one other writer we had on this program, Tony Horowitz, Midnight Rising, John Brown, and the raid that sparked the Civil War.
Yeah.
And if you had any doubt that John Brown wasn't a crazy man, you will have no more doubts after reading that book. Hey, thank you all very much for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Mark, thanks so much.
Hey, Mark.
That's Mark Luce from the Barstow School.
Mark.
Jeffrey Ann Gowdy from a freelance writer, editor, and reviewer, and Steve Paul from the Kansas City Star. Again, you'll find a complete list of all their favorite books of the year on our website, kcur.org.